Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. And, of course, many people are in uproar over the letter that people in Congress, some Republican members in Congress, signed and sent to Iran as we work our way through the really nagging issues in the Middle East and nagging issues with Iran, between Iran and the United States. We are joined here by Jim Phillips, who is a senior research fellow for Middle Eastern Affairs for the Douglas and Sarah Allison Center for Foreign and National Security Policy at the Heritage Foundation, and Ali Gharib, who is independent journalist and a contributor to The Nation. Ali and Jim, welcome. Good to have you both with us.
Well, thank you.
Great to be here.
And the number here is 410-319-8888. You can log on to our Facebook pages, tweet me at Mark Steiner, write to us here at talk@steinershow.org, 410-319-8888. So this has been an interesting kind of a conflict. Ali, let me start with you, if I might. And I saw your piece in The Nation. There were all kinds of questions and issues here around who understands what the Constitution is and the back and forth between Iran and Senator Cotton. So talk about what this means to you politically.
It's just of a piece with the sort of push and pull that's been going on between the Obama administration and Congress for months now about the Iran negotiations, years in fact. And I don't think that there's an unreasonable request here from the Congress to try and have a say in the nuclear talks. But at the same time, I understand why the Obama administration is reluctant to give it to him, because first of all, Congress has been totally intransigent on Iran talks, and what's more, it's sort of a dysfunctional institution. There are serious democratic questions here that we have to address. But at the same time, it's like you have a major initiative where you're trying to avoid a war with Iran. And then are you really going to put that in the hands of sort of an obstructionist body that's made clear that its agenda is just to stop these negotiations and bring a halt to them? I think it raises a lot of interesting questions, both about democratic principles, about policy, and how these things work. But so far the Obama administration seems to think that they can get away without giving Congress a direct say so, and working this through the international system and through its partners in negotiations.
And Jim, I just let you jump in here with what your thoughts on the very same thing. I was reading pieces by a former Bush official, law professor at Harvard University, talking about the era of this letter constitutionally, and what that to me sets up kind of politically in terms of what the real agenda is on either side.
Well, I think it's a combination of many things. There's always the institutional pull and counterpull, as you say, between the Congress and the executive branch. And there are many Democrats that also disagree with the president's policy on the Iran negotiations. But beyond that, I think there's also the intensifying polarization in Washington between the administration and Republicans in Congress, and kind of a pushback among Republicans for what they see as the unilateralism of the Obama administration on many issues, illegal immigration, as well as the Iran talks. And the administration plans to kind of do an end run around Congress by making this deal an executive agreement. And I think this is pushback from the Republicans saying, we will have influence on this one way or the other.
So where does this really take us? I want to talk about the heart and soul of this matter, which is the idea that some people in America think you cannot negotiate with Iran. Some people in America who kind of push the idea, as Senator Cotton does, of arming Israel with long-range bombers and bombs to be able to do the work for the West, quote-unquote. And I guess neither understand the complexities, not just not understand the complexities of politics in America, but not understanding, Ali, the complexities of the politics in Iran.
Well, yeah, I think that's a major problem with the way these issues are discussed. I mean, there's sort of this lack of understanding, and you can see in the way that a lot of Republicans talk about it. Iran, in fairness to all the commentators on this, Iran's got a complicated system, and with this dictatorial figure, the supreme leader Ali Khamenei at the top, but that doesn't mean that they have their own politics and that these politics can't influence policy in the way it works. I mean, these are calculated decisions. And then as far as the geopolitics of it, you mentioned Cotton's push to give weapons to Israel. Well, this is like, you know, this is sort of a piece with, as you said before, Cotton is one of the figures that wants to end negotiations. He keeps calling them sham nuclear negotiations, won't get us anywhere. And that's what's sort of so stark about this initiative with this letter, being, you know, a lot of Republican Senate aides were passing it off in the press yesterday. This was just like a cheeky attempt to try and get Congress to say so. Well, this letter should have been addressed to the president if that's what the Congress wanted, and if they wanted answers about what their say would be and what kind of agreement was going to be made. Jim just said that this was going to be an executive agreement. That's not actually the way it seems to be shaping up to my mind. I mean, I have no insider knowledge. I haven't gotten anything from sources on this yet. But it seems to me that if you listen to the way the administration is talking about it, it's going to be a sort of political understanding, what might be called the political arrangement between Iran and the United States, that, as Secretary Kerry said yesterday, makes this deal not legally binding in terms of international law, but then it would get the imprimatur of the U.N. Security Council, which would make it legally binding. Now, that doesn't solve the question of whether Congress has a say or not, except for the fact that it won't be a formal treaty, and so then Congress is not automatically entitled to a say. But this is just the way things are shaping up, and there's a lot of misunderstandings. I mean, these are incredibly complicated issues, and it's difficult to explain them. I mean, even, like, this is quite a long segment we're doing on this here between you, me, Mark, and Jim. And even still, I mean, it's just never enough time to sort of really get into all the issues here.
And so Jim, from what little I've read, I've been reading what you've read. I mean, are you of the mind that it is impossible for us to negotiate with Iran on this issue?
No, I'm not opposed to negotiations. I think they can be useful if they severely constrict Iran's nuclear weapons program and constrain its ability to hide that program in the fig leaf of its civilian nuclear program. But the deal that's emerging doesn't seem to do that. And another aspect that Ali mentioned that really grates at many Republicans in Congress is that the administration, by doing this end run around Congress, eventually will be going to the Security Council for a vote. So this is an agreement that's going to be extremely important to U.S. national security, and especially to the national security of our Middle Eastern allies, Israel, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and others. But yet, the Congress won't be voting, but the U.N. Security Council will be.
So, Ali, how do you view that? I mean, is this, are we looking at an end run around Congress? Is this, I mean...
Yeah, well, look, I mean, I do think Jim's right about that, and there's something, you know, there's something kind of ironic about it, because this is, like, look, this is not happening in a political vacuum. It's just like Obama said, that isn't just deciding off the cuff that he doesn't want Congress to get a say because he's, like, trying to hoard all the power for himself. You know, what we have here is, as I said before, an institution that's been totally dysfunctional, an institution that now, with the Republican victory in the Senate last fall, has has this majority party that's been nothing but obstructionist. I mean, the leaders of the Republican Party in Congress have been more than clear about this from the get-go, and not only that, but they've been clear through their actions as well. So in word and deed, they're just obstructionists, and I can't blame for Obama for not wanting to put a deal before them. That doesn't mean that their aspiration to get this in and of itself is not a legitimate aspiration. As I said before, and I think and hope Tim will agree with me on this, that it's entirely reasonable. You know, the separation of powers is supposed to provide checks and balances. It's supposed to provide oversight. And I think it's entirely reasonable for Congress to demand to say so. And in fact, like, this is the way institutions in systems with multiple power centers always work, right? Institutions want power. They're trying to get a piece for themselves. That's how this always goes down. And so you've got the situation where they do have legitimate aspirations, but you know, according to the Obama administration, I can't blame this for this view, even if I don't entirely agree with it. They just can't be trusted to have it because there's a possibility that you could see something that basically amounts to a political stunt, you know, just trying to obstruct Obama's agenda. And that's basically, I mean, that's evident, I think, in Tom Cotton's letter. The way it was addressed to the Iranians is a steal, you know, to try and get the Iranians to back down from the deal. This letter should have gone to Obama. They should have asked Obama these questions. They should have made clear their views, I mean, which I know they have, and Obama's done a poor job of answering them. But just going around the Obama administration to the Iranians, just, you know, and you can see in the way it's reflected in a lot of the editorials that have been written about this, even from conservative newspapers and sort of the heartland, you know, the quote-unquote real America or whatever, these newspapers have all objected to this because it's just kind of unseemly. Like, it stinks of political stunt. And so, you know, I can't really blame the Obama administration for thinking that maybe that if they want to get this deal done, they have to go around Congress.
Jim?
Well, you know, I think it was the Democratic Speaker, Sam Rayburn, that said if you want Congress in on a crash landing, you better have it on board at the takeoff, meaning that a wise president would always seek congressional advice and consent, even if it technically and legally wasn't required, just because politically, as a practical matter, that would give a policy legs and help it be sustained. And I think that essentially is what this letter was meant to do. Although it was addressed to the Iranians, really it was aimed at President Obama and was and the administration, really, because I think a lot of it is some of the poor advice he's getting from his advisors to try to do this as, you know, an executive branch agreement. And that has led to a backlash in Congress.
If I can, Mark.
Allie, go ahead.
I know. I just wanted to say, you know, there's an interesting comparison here that was written up in an op-ed in the New York Times yesterday by a gentleman named Tyler Cullis, who's with the National Iranian American Council.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. Yeah,
it was a really interesting comparison. Now, the comparison was Ford Helsinki to strike, you know, what's colloquially called the Helsinki Accords, which was the Helsinki final act, the formal name. And it was an agreement between states in under Soviet influence, you know, the Eastern Bloc and the Soviet Union, as well as Western European and states in America to sort of de-escalate the Cold War, and it sowed the seeds for the beginning of the detente. Now, at this time also, an apt comparison, because Congress, you know, Congress, as we all know in the 70s and, you know, through the Cold War, there was a lot of Cold War hawks there, and Congress was roundly opposed to this detente and demanded a say over the Helsinki Accords and really pressed for it, which, again, is their total right to do so, and Ford kept them away. He kept them off. And, you know, it's a stark thought and sort of frightening to imagine that this accord, which ended up becoming the beginnings of the end of the Cold War, would have been rejected by Congress at the outset. I mean, you know, when you think about a comparison like that, you can sort of get a feeling for why it goes around. And, you know, Rayburn's quote notwithstanding, and again, this is something I agree with Jim on broadly, is that I do think that there's an important role to Congress. You know, I think the sort of the genius of the co-equal branches of government and having these checks and balances, and that's really important for our democracy. But when you have the sort of obstinacy that we've seen from the Republican Congress, you know, it's just tough to imagine how it would work.
And in some ways, Jim, I was thinking about you, that what Ali just said, and you're raising raising back up Sam Rayburn. Of course, that was a time when the Congress went back and forth in control, and when he was Speaker of the House for those different terms. That this was kind of for want of a better term, a time when it was kind of the white gentleman's club that kind of ran Congress, and there wasn't this acrimony that exists today.
Yeah, I think that's true. There was a lot more trust, not only institutional trust between the branches of government, but also personal trust. And I think at heart, one of the problems with the emerging Iran deal is that the Obama administration has been so wrong on so many Middle Eastern issues, going back to, you know, we didn't need to keep troops in Iraq because the war was over and Iraq was stable, and going on to its failed approach to Arab-Israeli peace by focusing so early on the settlements that forced the PLO to get even more hardline on settlements than it was before, and that really sank any hope of progress. And then, you know, the Arab Spring, assuming that the overthrow of dictators would inevitably lead to democracy, and as we saw in Libya, that went horribly astray. And so because of all these errors in judgment, Congress is really bridling about the administration's analysis of Iran.
Ali, final thought before we have to go to break here. I think we're all going to break, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough not to disagree with Jim that the Obama's foreign policy in the Middle East is totally in disarray. I mean, I have some different views about some of those initiatives.
I imagine so.
Focused on the settlement was great. And but yeah, there's no doubt that it's in disarray. Some of those factors have been you know, largely out of the Obama administration's controls, which just speaks to the way that we have, like, the way the world works these days. And just there's no, you know, a superpower just can't be quite as super anymore. So I largely agree with Jim, but, you know, at the same time, I actually support this initiative with the Iranians, and I do think that this is a good way to at least curtail their ambitions and try and get a deal that would give us, you know, I disagree with what Jim said before. I do think that this deal would both constrain the Iranians and also would give us ample time to be able to detect a breakout. I mean, it's our best shot at detecting breakout. This is never perfect. There is no preventing Iran from getting a nuclear weapon if they really want it, whether it's by diplomacy or whether it's by bombing them. There's no perfect solution here, but I do think that this really is the best shot we've got, and that means compromising, which a lot of the Congress is not very pleased with, certainly not Tom Cotton, who doesn't want any negotiations at all. But I think that, you know, this has to be given a shot.
Well, we're just out of time on this particular subject for the day, but we'll come back to it. I appreciate you both for your time. Yusra Ali Gharib, who is independent journalist and contributor to The Nation, and Jim Phillips, senior research fellow for Middle Eastern Affairs for the Douglas and Sarah Allison Center for Foreign and National Security Policy at the Heritage Foundation. Jim Phillips and Ali Gharib, thank you both so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you, Mark, and thanks, Jim.
Appreciate it. We're going to take a very brief break, and on our way to break, you're hearing I'll Be Your Mirror by the Velvet Underground and Necro from their self-titled debut album, was released on this day in 1967. When we come back, we're going to have a discussion on the intersection of race and class and all its complexity in America. Stay with us. Don't go away.
That inside you're twisted and unkind.